Well, here we are again. Greetings from Truth for Today. Oscar Baker speaking. And this is a continuation in the study of the Book of Revelation, our second section. And we just left off last time with the seven stars in Revelation and what they symbolize and so on, and we didn't get to give too much of that, but they're the angels of the seven churches. And we have a reference in Hebrews 1:7. I have that here. And of the angels, he saith, who maketh his angel spirits and his ministers a flame of fire. And so here is his angels in a flame of fire. We have other references here, I think a couple of them. Yes, John 1:6-8. I'm taking the time to look these up, so it'll give you time to look them up too, along with me. I know it takes a little bit of time, but it's well worth it. So John 1:6-8. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. And the same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. It shows you pretty plainly there, the relationship of these who are to show forth the light. Now, we have some other things here. The symbolism of Christ himself. We've talked about other symbolisms and symbolisms of the churches. Now the symbolism of Christ, first his personality, and he is called the Son of Man. That makes it a close personal relationship to these people, these churches in Asia Minor. His place is in the midst of the church. And his prerogatives are symbolized by his robe. He was clothed with a garment down to the feet and girt about at the breast with a golden girdle. Verse 13. And there we have the garment, royal, judicial, priestly, the girdle of righteousness, of faithfulness, of love. And we might even take a reference on some of these. Isaiah 6:1. In the year that Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up. And his train, that is, his robe, filled the temple. Well, now that is a picture. And I think we have another one over in 11:5, Isaiah. We can take that one and then skip back to another one I have. Isaiah 11:5. And righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. And remember about the armor that is in Ephesians 6. There's a girdle mentioned there. Then we have one other reference. That's in Exodus 28:20-25. Exodus 28, 20 to 25. Let's see now. Exodus 28, I said. I can get these leaves turned. All right, we have Exodus 28 and 30 to 35. This is talking about the ordaining of the priests and dressing them and so on. And I shall put the breastplate of judgment, the Urim and the Thummim, and they shall be upon Aaron's heart when he goes in before the Lord. And Aaron shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel upon his heart before the Lord continually. And thou shalt make the robe of the ephod all of blue, and there shall be an hole in the top of it in the midst thereof. It shall have a binding woven work around the hole of it, as it was a hole of an habergeon, and it be not rent. And beneath upon the hem of it thou shalt make pomegranates of blue and of purple and scarlet round about the hem thereof, and bells of gold between them round about. A golden bell and a pomegranate, a golden bell and a pomegranate upon the hem of the robe round about. And it shall be upon Aaron to minister, and his sound shall be heard when he goes into the holy place before the Lord, and when he cometh out, that he die not. When you go back, read all of Exodus about the setting up of the tabernacle, ordaining of the priesthood, and so on. You see a lot of things to meditate upon. Take it slowly. Those things all spoke of Christ. And the tabernacle itself, every part of it, had some significance. And the base, the foundations, the sockets of the tabernacle were redemption silver weighing about 100 pounds each, in which the boards were set. Redemption money. The foundation of the whole thing was redemption. What a wonderful lesson for us. Well, that's just going in for free. So we find Christ in his judicial relation to the church. On the authority of his fulfilled priesthood. That's what we were reading about there. Well, we might take a look at Hebrews 7, 24 to 27 on that. Hebrews 7. I've seen a lot of youngsters trained in this business of looking up things in the Bible to find a reference, and I took a knife in. I never was speedy on that somehow or other. See, I said Hebrews 7, 24 to 27. But this man, an interesting part of Hebrews occurs twice. There's a lot of meat in between the two occurrences. But this man, because he continueth ever, has an unchangeable priesthood. Wherefore he is able to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. For such an high priest became us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher than the heavens, who need not daily, as those high priests, offer up sacrifice first for his own sins and then for the people's. For this he did once, when he offered up himself. Well, that's something on that. Well, let's turn to the 10th chapter here of Hebrews. That's just over a little way. And 26 and 7. 10, 26 and 7. For if we sin willfully, after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for judgment and fiery indignation which shall devour the adversaries. There's a picture of people under the law, Israel. And we might turn to 1 Peter 4. First Peter 4:17-18. For the time has come that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of God? And if the righteous scarcely be saved, for us the ungodly and the sinner appear. Some weighty questions. But when we see this revelation of Jesus Christ in all of his glory and his purity and so on in connection with people of Israel, we can see that there is little excuse for sin. Sinning against the law was a terrible thing. But today, sinning against the love of Christ, well, that seems to me to be even worse. Well, now we have about his person, especially, and the symbols. His hair, his head and hair were white, with white wool, as we found in verse 14 as we were reading. White as snow, white wool. Now his head, of course, that's administrative authority. His head. A king was head. And he had authority. And he has authority today as head of the church, which is his body. But not particularly from the kingly point of view. There's a little different point of view in it. Now his hair was white. Ageless purity, white is used often in the Bible. Wool, earthly purity. And snow, heavenly purity. I just might give you a little instance along this line of snow. Back in the time of World War I, they were working so hard to get a super explosive. And it turned out to be TNT. Of course, that's old hat now. But they had trouble. They had to have absolutely pure materials with which to make it. If there's any flaws or anything, the stuff was touchy and is liable to go off. And about the first thing that happened was that the factory over in the east blew up. Well, they worked on it some more. And finally they thought they had it pure, and they loaded up a ship with it to send over to Europe, and it got as far as Halifax and blew up and destroyed a part of the city of Halifax. Now some of you folks remember these things that happened. And finally one of the scientists just happened to remember that up on a mountaintop, way up there among the snow and so on, he could find purity that he wouldn't find anywhere else. That the snow wasn't contaminated when it was coming down to a mountaintop like it might be down in a valley coming through the air and so on. And so with that hint in hand and using some vacuum, so forth, they managed to get their TNT perfected, sent a shipload of it over to Europe, and the Germans began to run. That's the story in short. I don't know whether you'll find that in a history book or not. I heard it from a man who was a brother to the man who was head of the factory manufacturing the stuff. Well, that's interesting. To have purity here in the Bible, and especially in connection with Christ. And these are things to really remember and study. Well, the purity and the perpetuity of the administrative acts shown here by the white and the wool and the snow. And his crowning and adorning his glorious person And we'll just have to go back to Daniel 7:9 to a little reference on that. See. Daniel 7:9. Yes. Here we are. And I beheld till the thrones were cast down. Now, don't get scared about that. Now, they weren't throwing thrones, as we know, looked like barber chairs or something like that down. Thrones at that time when they had a conference were silk cushions. And so they were thrown down on the floor and they sat around in a circle and had their conference. So thrones don't always mean barber chairs. And the Ancient of Days did sit. The Ancient of Days, capitalized, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. It's wonderful how we have so many cross-references like that that speak of the same things. But remember that it was the author of the Bible who does this. He remembers, and he does repeat these things. Reading this book of Revelation and checking, you will find at least 285 prophecies of the Old Testament mentioned. No two other books in the New Testament come up to that total. Not even in Matthew, which is so particularly Jewish and has a great number of references to prophecy. And so for Israel, this book of Revelation is very, very important. I'll jump the gun just a little bit here on this. This will never happen, these things that's in the book of Revelation to those seven churches. They're gone, and it didn't happen. Because Israel were divorced and set aside, and their history cut off at Acts 28:28. And so after this period in which we live, the dispensation of history, after it is over, prophecy will be taken up again, as I said a while ago, at Chapter 4 in the Revelation. And they'll be taken up. But these first three chapters, they're gone. They're done. And so if we want to get the future, have to start in with Chapter 4. Really, Chapter 5, because 4 isn't too relevant. That's going ahead a little bit, but give you an idea so you can put things together. There's another reference, Proverbs 18:31. I might just take a look at that. Proverbs 18:31. Maybe I'll get some practice here looking these up too. And here it is. Now, I gave something wrong here. There's no 31st verse in Proverbs 18. So, something has gone wrong here. I didn't go back and check these. I didn't have time to go back and check them again. Well, we'll have to leave that one go because there's no such reference here. I will check it and fix that up on my notes later. Well, we have another group here and symbols. His eyes were as flames of fire. That's in verse 14 that we read. Now, eyes have to do with discernment, seeing, intelligence. We talk us of seeing something when really we aren't using our eyes, do we? You tell me, 2 and 2 equals 4, and I say, oh, I see. Well, we have expressions like that, you see. So they have the idea of discernment, of having intelligence. And fire is searching as a consuming power. Flame of fire. And here we have some things signified. His infinite knowledge. His infinite knowledge. Our scientists and so on are great. They can take apart the atoms and all that sort of thing, send rockets up into the sky and so forth, but Christ knew all about that before he even created the earth. And he's discovering the hidden things and discriminating between the evil and the good. Discriminating between the evil and the good. 1 Corinthians 3:12-15. Every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed the fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burnt, and if any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet as by fire. So, there is the eyes of Christ, won't miss anything. Discriminating. We have his feet, like on the burnished brass, as if it had been refined. And after all, folks, in art and so on, burnished brass is beautiful. As for me, I really like it better in some ways than gold, or beauty. Of course, if all the gold we know isn't too pure. Well, his feet has to do with a walk and a way that you're going. Brass as enduring strength and burnished as an external purity, beauty, polished, refined, internal purity. See, burnished is external, refined is internal purity, and it has to do with holiness for the external. His beauty. And so here we have the purity and the power of his administrative processes, revealing the holiness of his way and the irresistibility of his will. We have a reference here of Isaiah 60:13. Might as well look up some of these. I hope that's a good one. Isaiah 60:13. And here we have it. Isaiah 60:13. The glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box, together to beautify the place of my sanctuary, and I will make the place of my feet glorious. be sure that I have this right. Yeah. I've read a little bit more than I needed, but that's all right. Verse 13. Okay, and look at Isaiah 63, 1 to 4. You'd be surprised when you go to studying Isaiah of the descriptions that it gives of Christ. A few years ago, we went into a study of Isaiah in our class, and I think we learned quite a few things. Let's see, I said 63, 1 to 4. Who is this that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in mightiness, in righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the wine fat? I have trodden the winepress alone, and at the and of the peoples there was none with thee. For I will tread them in my anger and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. And one more verse. For the day of vengeance is in mine heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. I think possibly that's enough references for that one. Now we go on to his voice, verse 16, in Revelation 1. His voice is a voice of many waters. Now sometimes the voice of a multitude of people is spoken of as a voice of many waters. That is a figure of speech. And here his voice is a voice of many waters. A voice is expression. He's expressing something. He's telling us something. And a voice has to do with unity and harmony. I've heard some voices that weren't too harmonious, but not with the Lord's voice. It would be harmonious. And a voice of many waters. A great diversity and volume. He had a lot of things to say. And remember that the whole Bible is concerning him. A lot of voices there, but all practically in one. And so he has the unity here in this revelation and the harmony of the inspired utterances, speaking by one authority, but through many authors in all the Bible. We well know Hebrews 1, 1 and 2. We better take a look at that. Hebrews 1, 1 and 2. God, who at sundry times in diverse manners spoke from time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these days, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds of the ages, who being the brightness of his glory and express image of his person, upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down on the right hand of majesty on high, and so on. He's spoken. We have over in Revelation 19:10, a little something that we can look forward to. Revelation 19:10, of course, that verse 19 is a great Advent chapter. And I fell at his feet to worship him. And he said unto me, see thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant. He's talking to an angel there. I am thy fellow servant, the angel says. And as thy brethren that have the testimony of Jesus, worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. So we have some very important things like that. Well, I think I have another reference here. No, not on that one. All right. There's some more symbols. He had in his right hand seven stars. Verse 16. In his right hand is possession, protection. The seven stars are messengers of the church. And so the things that are symbolized, the source of authority and the place of accountability and protection for execution of the ministerial office. We're using some big words here sometimes, but they have to do with Christ and His glory. We might just take a look at 1 Corinthians 9:16. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. I think I have another verse there. Verse 27. But I keep under my body, and bring it under subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Well, we have another group here. We've been talking about groups here. This is number 6. And the symbols. Out of his mouth proceeded a sharp, two-edged sword. Now, mouth has to do with judgment, has to do with testimony. The mouth of the Lord, at least. Proceeded, which means went forth. And the sword, of course, was the word of God. Sharp, quick of discernment, two-edged, dual in action. And what does this symbolize? For Christ. In the exercise of his judicial prerogative, judging the motives and methods of the church and pronouncing sentences of commendation and condemnation. Just look back at John 12:47-50. The book of John 12:47-50. John 12:47-50. And if any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not. For I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. He that rejecteth me and receiveth not my words, as one that judges him, the word that I have spoken, the same shall judge him in the last day. For I have not spoken of myself, but the Father which sent me, he gave me a commandment that I should say and what I should speak. And I know that his commandment is life everlasting. Whatsoever I speak, therefore, even as the Father saith unto me, so I speak. In our reading, we should be careful to watch all these little things. Now you notice here that taking this first chapter of Revelation slowly, we can spend practically hours on it. I'm cutting this down. I might have more to say about some of these things, but I don't want to tire folks. Well, I have just a little more here. We have here something according to the testimony of his word in connection with what we just said. Then we have group seven, the symbols. His countenance was as the sun shining in his strength. That's verse 16 in chapter 1, Revelation. His countenance. Well, that we usually speak with a face. It's his personality, however. His deity and his humanity all shown forth in his countenance. And the sun, as the sun shining. He's the light giver. That's the reason. As the sunlight. Unalloyed purity. Shining in strength. Light unclouded. Glory. Things symbolized. And that is Christ and his essential deity shining forth through his unfallen humanity. The life of God that became the light of men. Why? Some wonderful things there. The light of men. Well, we have some references on that. And that will end that little group there of symbols. There's seven of those. Well, let's look at Psalm 84:11. Psalm 84:11. For the Lord God is a sun and a shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. A sun and a shield. Sometimes we need a shield from the sun, don't we? That is, in our everyday life. Well, I think of his essential deity is shining forth in this symbol. In his unfallen humanity, as we just said, the life of God that became the light of men. We might look at John 1. John has a wonderful testimony concerning the Lord. One of our favorite books. Yeah, finally getting to it. John 1, I think. Yes. 4, 5, and 9. In him was life. And the life was the light of men. And the light shines in darkness. The darkness comprehended it not. And verse 9. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. You might go back to Mark 9. Mark 9, 2 to 8. And after 6 days, Jesus taketh with him Peter and James and John, and leadeth them up into an high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. And his raiment became shining, exceeding the white of snow, so as no fuller on earth can white them. And there appeared unto him Elias with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. And Peter answered and said to Jesus, Master, it is good for us to be here, and let us make three tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elias. And then, verse 9, And it came down from the mountain, And he charged them that they should tell no man what things they had seen till the Son of Man was risen from the dead. Just look for his glories. Well, now here is Mark 9:2-8. Well, that's what we just read, isn't it? Mark 9:2-8. I was thinking of John. Luke 9:28-36. That's quite a long one there, but I think we have time for it. And the son of Elias had appeared, and others of one of the sons of the old prophets was risen again. And Herod said, John have I beheaded, but who is this of whom I hear such things? And he desired to see him. And the apostles, when they returned, told him what they had done. I'm reading in the wrong place, excuse me. I said Luke. Did I not? 9:28. I got on the wrong page. And it came to pass about 8 days after these sayings, he took Peter and John and James and went up into a mountain to pray. And as he prayed, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistening. And behold, there talked with him two men, which were Moses and Elias, and who appeared in glory, and spoke of his decease, which he should accomplish at Jerusalem. But Peter and they that were with him were heavy with sleep. I notice it, heavy with sleep at this transfiguration. And when they were awake, they saw his glory and the two men that stood with him. And it came to pass, as they departed from him, Peter said unto Jesus, Master, it is good for us to be here, and let us make three tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elias. Of course, not knowing what he said. And while he thus spake, there came a cloud and overshadowed them, and they feared as they entered into the cloud. And there came a voice out of the cloud, saying, This is my beloved Son, hear him. And when the voice was passed, Jesus was found alone. And they kept it close, and told no man in those days any of those things which they had seen. I think you'll find in one place that the Lord tells him not to tell that vision to any man. So we have to have a choice between whether they actually saw the Lord glorified like that, or whether it was a vision that they saw him while they were asleep there. Well, I'll leave that with you. I won't judge on that. Well, I see it. We're getting just about to the end of the time on this one. And we have a little bit more to do on this for next time. But just go back over and over this first chapter of Revelation until it begins to get in on your consciousness and you can see what each word really means and so on. As I said at the beginning, that we're giving this picture of Christ as he is related to Israel, to as a step to our going on and seeing him as the head of the church, which is his body, having a glory that no man can describe. That's what we're getting to. And I hope that you will spend some time meditating on these things and getting to know the Lord better and better. So this is the end of this lesson.